Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest and greatest episode of Inside the Hexagon. I am your host, as always, Phil Landides, and I want to thank you for taking the time to join us for today's show. On the episode today, we have Anthony "Ant Dog" Figueroa, a longtime Strike Force undercard fighter. This is a very, very interesting conversation. We really delve into the mentality of what makes a fighter, how a fighter deals with wins and losses, how they deal with winning streaks and losing streaks, how they deal with losing to the same fighter twice. And we really get into Anthony's experiences within the confines of Strike Force, talk about what he's up to today. He's a very good coach now at this point. He coaches out of Gilroy, California, which is in the Bay Area. I actually used to live in Gilroy. I trained at Anthony's gym a couple of times. And so it's good to reconnect with him and really get into his kind of his psyche and his approach. And again, I think this is a fascinating conversation. So without further ado, let's get to it. Joining us today on the line with us, my very special guest, Anthony "Ant Dog" Figueroa. Anthony, how you doing, man?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Good. I appreciate you taking the time to join us. And this is going to be an interesting chat. I'm looking forward to talking with you. I know you're a Bay Area guy. That's where I'm from. I used to live in Gilroy. So we've crossed paths before. And so I'm excited to kind of reconnect with you and talk with you again. But if you're ready, let's dive right in.
Let's do it.
All right. So you made your pro MMA debut in California in 2006. You won one fight before heading to Strikeforce. I know you trained with Kung Lee. Was he your main trainer? And if so, how did you get connected with him and how did you get started in MMA?
Yeah. When I started, he was definitely my main coach, and that was where I trained at. And it was more of a Sancho gym. So I kind of got started like doing stand-up. I did some taekwondo. I was doing taekwondo tournaments. You couldn't punch. I did boxing when I was a kid. And then I kind of looking for gyms and I found Kung Lee. And then he kind of guided me, you know, from there on into MMA because he was transitioning from Sancho to MMA. And so we just kind of all followed as a team where I went right into MMA. And so I started there and then I ended up at AKA, you know, at the end.
Okay. So are you, I know, I believe when your gym started, you were affiliated with Kung. Are you affiliated with him still, or with, are you with AKA, or are you just your own?
I'm my own. Yeah. Okay. Now I'm my own. Now I'm just, you know, I'm just running my own gym. So okay. I'm not really affiliates. My gym's not, but, yeah, like I went from Kung's and then I kind of transitioned into, going to AKA and, you know, I've been at AKA for a lot of years too. And I kind of finished my pro career from AKA.
Okay. And obviously just a who's who of fighters from AKA. So cool to hear that you're amongst that group. You ended up fighting six times for Strike Force, ended up with a 3-3 record within that specific promotion. What was it like being local? What was it like being able to fight in front of your friends and your family? Is there extra pressure involved in that because you know people that are in the crowd?
It was fun. It was more fun than anything. When I look back and I think about it now, it was awesome. It was exciting. I had fun. It was a good time. It was great to be like fighting in front of my home crowd. I liked it, but at the same time, I always liked fighting away too, because I don't know what it was. Maybe maybe it was the pressure or just being away and kind of just makes it a little bit different going into enemy territory. I kind of liked that more than being home. Fighting in front of the home crowd is kind of weird, but
okay. Well, so yeah. If I may, maybe the thought process is it's also kind of new. I mean, you know, you're driving from Gilroy, assuming you lived in Gilroy, but driving from Gilroy up to San Jose or down to San Jose, I get, or up to San Jose, always forget if it's north or south. But as you head up north, I mean, you're talking half an hour, you know, versus flying somewhere or driving a couple hours and it's somewhere new, it's somewhere different. So maybe it's just a little bit more exciting for you.
Yeah, I just like that. I like to kind of fight away when I did fight. I enjoyed being away, like going off to battle where when I was here, I was home. It was great. I loved it too. And I loved having all the fans and like the support. Like I enjoyed both equally and they both kind of had their benefits, you know, like having fun with both of them. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you were very much a staple of the undercard in those early Strikeforce events. You made your debut later in 2006, not at Shamrock versus Gracie, but at I believe it was Triple Threat, which was later in the year. What was it like, kind of seeing, you know, this became your local promotion, basically? What was it like seeing it really grow and develop? How exciting was that for you?
It was awesome. You know, it kind of brought me good opportunity. It brought me opportunities. It got me some shine. It was cool to fight on the big local stage around here, like in the HP, and just being part of that promotion and watching it grow is pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, despite regularly putting on fights featuring fighters under 155 pounds, Strikeforce never had any featherweight, bantamweight, flyweight champions or anything like that. Did you ever hear talk of creating belts for those weight classes, or was it just always just kind of they were standalone divisions pretty much?
You know, there was never really too much talk, but I remember when Strikeforce went in with Elite XC, mm-hmm. I don't know if Elite XC had a champion at those weight classes.
I don't think they did. I think WEC was the only one that was really promoting. One, yeah. It was really promoting champions at those weight classes.
Yeah. So it was just, I kind of knew, you know, and then towards the end of my, like I'd say towards the end of when I was fighting for the promotions or fighting in general, the 125 started coming out, mm-hmm. and then the UFC and the WEC. And so that was cool to see it. You know, I kind of feel like I was there when it was still evolving. I was still a stand-up fighter in those fights too. And then I learned some jiu-jitsu, and then I learned wrestling during my professional career. So I was kind of like that last end wave of that, like martial arts versus martial arts, wrestler versus mm-hmm. stand-up, or stand-up guy versus jiu-jitsu. So that was pretty cool to be part of that, I feel like.
Do you feel like, I mean, obviously the 125 class is a much bigger deal now than it was. I mean, it didn't really even really exist at that point when you were really fighting. Do you, you know, look at it now and be like, man, I wished I was born 10 years too early or yeah. anything like that? Are you more natural 125er than 135?
Yeah. Even then, when I was fighting at 35, I was weighing in at like 133, mm-hmm. like heavy, eating okay. pasta, going to weigh-ins, fully hydrated. So I never really had to cut. So I was always like a natural 125er, you know, even when, and then I, at the end, they opened up 25s. I was probably cutting 8 pounds easy, you know? So,
yeah. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, it's kind of one of those things. I interviewed Kung several weeks back, and it actually just ran a few weeks ago as we record this, but or as this episode runs. But he, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about that. As, you know, man, was maybe he was born 10 years too early. That if, you know, if he'd come into MMA with his striking abilities and also be a very good wrestler and that sort of thing, maybe he would have, you know, maybe he would have gone even in further and longer in the sports. Yeah. So kind of a similar situation with you.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, I want to really talk about the mentality of a fighter. Talk about dealing with wins and losses. In Strikeforce, you won your first couple, you won a couple fights by decision, and yeah. you also won one by strikes, TKO via punches. Is it for you, is it a win is a win is a win? It, you know, it doesn't really matter as far as, you know, how a fight finishes, or is it you want to get, I mean, everybody's going to say they want to get the finish because it's more exciting, but at the same time, if the fight goes the distance, I mean, that's more work. I mean, that's, you get to put on more of your skill set on display and that sort of thing. Do you have a preference between the two and kind of, again, talk a little bit about the mentality of, you know, getting a win by decision or a win by finish.
Yeah. I for myself, it was the mentality of going in and just winning the fight. Like, I just wanted to fight. You know, I was trying to finish. I was trying to win the fight. I never really thought about, I think that there's like a couple of different kinds of fighters now. And there's the ones that go into fight with a purpose and want to win. And every round they're trying to finish. Then you got guys who compete, you know, they compete and they want to, they're doing what it takes to kind of to win the round, or doing what it takes to win the fight. And, you know, and, that I think that's the difference between the competitor and the fighter. The fighter's going in, they're trying to win every round, trying to finish every fight, and how it ends up is how it ends up. And then you got guys that are like, I'm going to do enough to win, you know? And I think it's important to go in there with that killer mentality to win the fight, to finish the fight. And I think that takes you farther in the long run. You know, of course, fight smart, you know, you don't want to do anything silly, but you got to go in there with that killer mentality. I think that's super important. And I feel like I had that early. I never really thought about the wins or the loss. I just always thought about the fight and going in there and kind of hurting the guy and trying to finish him and put my efforts on him, really. And that's kind of like, that's how I feel. And even as I coach now, I'm like, you got to go in there. No matter what happens in the first round, we're trying to finish him. We come out in the second, we got to go do the same thing. Like, you cannot ease off. You know, they might come back stronger. Like, it doesn't matter. Every round's got to be like a new fight, a new, like, let's go in there and do the same thing. Let's try to hurt him, try to finish him, you know? So that's, I think the fighter mentality of finishing the fight is always going to be the best. And usually that guy has the advantage over the fight.
You kind of, this is a good segue, but you mentioned basically you took each fight as its own individual fight. Now, you lost two fights to Chris Carriasso, who went on to have a very successful run in the WEC and in the UFC. I'd like to delve into the mental toughness it takes to deal with two losses to the same fighter. It does happen, you know, fairly commonly. You beat, I think, David Berrios. You beat him in your first two fights, so you'd put that on somebody else early on in your career. And you lose by decision to Carriasso at Shamrock versus Brony. You win two your next three before getting a rematch with him, which you end up losing by finish. But having lost previously to a fighter, do you feel added pressure to get that one back, so to speak? Or is it, you kind of touched on it, but is it just another fight and it doesn't really matter what has happened before?
For that one in particular, like the first fight, when I look at it, I thought I won. You know, so I felt leaving that fight, I left it all in there.
It was definitely close. I watched it. It was definitely close.
And so I think I still feel like I thought I won. I didn't, you know, there's fights that you fight and you're like, I feel like I won that fight. I left it in there. I did what I did everything I could do. I thought I won the fight. They got the decision. So, you know, when you leave the fight in there, that's the good thing. Win or lose, you're like, I lost the fight, but, you know, I left it in there and it was a close fight. The second fight, I was more excited, you know, like to fight him again, because we had such a good first fight. And he came out with, you know, he was a little more gamed. He played a little bit more mixed martial arts, using all his game. You know, he took me down, he made me grapple. And I went in there with the mindset of like, we're going to fight again. We're going to kind of go at it. So, you know, more than the added pressure, I was more excited to get it back and fight him again. You know, he won. He definitely won that fight.
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, obviously hard to argue with. It was a rear naked choke in the second round. And it was a much different fight in that one. He was all over you, to be honest with you.
He grappled me the whole fight. Like I was thinking of standing up and fighting, and the whole fight where he's had me grappling on my back, you know, mounted on my back. He stayed on top the whole time. And, you know, that was me evolving, you know, as a fighter as well. Like those losses, all my losses, I evolved. I've always went back, fixed everything. So like I said, I started as a striker, a boxer, and a taekwondo and kickboxer, learned wrestling during my pro career, learned jiu-jitsu during my pro career. So, you know, I don't take anything away from my losses. I learned from them, and I try to pass it on to the people that I coach now. Like, I feel like it's helped me be a better coach.
Okay. All right. Well, so, and let me ask about losing streaks and winning streaks. So that second loss to Carriasso, and I'm looking at your record right now, you ended up, you got a draw in there, but basically you lost five of six fights, and the Carriasso one was the second one. And then you lost three of your next four, with one being a draw. But then you go on a pretty good winning streak, and you win five of your next six fights and end up ending your career at winning seven of your last nine fights. So is there, like, I mean, being that you fight so infrequently, if you're busy, you're fighting every 3 or 4 months, is it difficult to kind of deal with like a losing streak or winning streak? Does it feel like a streak? Or again, is it just fight by fight? You forget what happened, or you try to learn from the last fight, whatever happened, and you just kind of move forward? Or do you feel like, man, I'm on a winning streak and I need to continue that? Or, man, I'm on a losing streak, I need to stop this.
My mentality was like, I lost those four. It was a different weight class. If you look, I finally, when I started winning the winning streak again, I finally dropped down to 125. Mm. I was fighting much bigger guys. They're all 135. And even those last two that I fought that I have losses on, I felt like I won them. It was Shorty Rock and Alex Perez. They're both title fights. And I thought I won those fights, you know, but I didn't get the win. I didn't get those decisions, but, like I said, those losses that I had early, they never like steered me away from my motivation to learn and get better and grow. I never took me out of, you know, it just put me more, I was a little more hungry to learn. I need to like I went and learned wrestling. I went to Gilroy High School and learned wrestling with Coach Armando for 2 years. I put myself in a wrestling room. I learned jujitsu. I put myself in a gi and I learned jujitsu. And, you know, now I'm a black belt in jujitsu. I got my black belt under Leandro Vieira. So rather than it like deterring me and me worrying about the losses, they did not feel good. It was tough, but it didn't stop me from growing. You know, I used it to grow, to get better. And I've always kind of been more of a martial artist fighting than like a fighter just training to fight. You know, I always used it to come back and like, all right, I need to go get my wrestling better. I'm going to go put myself in wrestling. It was tough. I never gave up. I never looked back. I never thought twice about giving up or even like slowing down or putting that pressure of like, I have to win. I just trained for each fight and got better each time. And as soon as that weight class, and I was able to jump into that new weight class too, I think that also, I kind of found my home there.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be huge. If you're, you know, not even cutting weight. I mean, you know, obviously you're going to do better if you can get in where you can cut at least a little bit of weight. So that makes sense. Well, I want to ask one more question about losing, and then we'll move on to a couple other things, but the two losses to Karius, I mean, how do you move on from that as a fighter? Is it like, God, I got to get one against this guy, or again, you just kind of learn from it and move on. And do you take any solace in knowing that, I mean, Karius went on a challenge for the UFC flyweight title. I mean, obviously very successful career. So obviously a very good fighter. Does that, you know, kind of soften it a little bit knowing that you beat a guy who was also very good? And again, how do you kind of move on from that as a fighter? You just kind of just on to the next one.
Yeah. It's, you know, when I see him in there and I'm like, man, that's awesome that he made it. You know, I'm glad, I'm happy for him. And I still feel like I won that first fight, but he got me in the second one. So it didn't really matter. So it's always good to see someone I fought and had a good fight would do really well. That always kind of made me, you know, I'm always cheering for them in a sense. Same thing with Perez. He just fought for the title.
That's right.
And he decisioned me, and you know, Itachi, we fought for the belt. And I thought I won, but I took me too long to turn it on in that fight. You know, it was good to see him make it to that, like the pinnacle and fight for the title and watch him come up and knowing that I fought him and kind of like got to share the cage with him. And, you know, I'm cheering for him, you know, in a sense.
Plus, I would also say probably being that you guys are both 25ers and knowing that that's kind of the, as far as the men's divisions goes, that's the one that probably gets the least amount of respect, whether, you know, fairly or unfairly. So I would think it's maybe a little bit more of a brotherhood, you know, amongst the guys that, you know, basically built that division, you know? So I would imagine that you are going to pull for those guys anyways, because you're all, you know, cut from the same cloth, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, as we mentioned, you've had the gym in Gilroy for a long, long time. Ant Dogs MMA. You last fought in, it was 2017, I believe. Talk to us about transitioning from fighting into coaching. I mean, based on what we've discussed, you sound like a very cerebral fighter that you're always very much thinking about improving and all that stuff. So it sounds like you were just really tailor-made for coaching. So I assume that was an easy transition for you, but talk about that. How was that transition?
From fighting to coaching, it was pretty simple. Cause ever since I had the gym, you know, I've been coaching in the gym and I've taught kids martial arts for a very long time. So it was a pretty simple transition. It was good to like, all right, I'm done fighting. It's time to give back like 100%. And now I can spend a little bit more time on, you know, just giving back. Cause when I used to fight, I would have to like get a little bit selfish and train for myself, and you know, things would kind of like, you know, I would just be training more for myself, so I wouldn't worry as much or give back as much to the classes maybe that I was teaching. So as I'm transitioning to coach now, it's like I can give back more. I can kind of see a little bit more from the outside and critique everybody a little bit better. And so it's kind of simple for me, to be honest. It's kind of been simple to transition. Okay. Especially since I've ran the gym for so long.
Yeah. You've had that gym for a long time. So you've been working with other athletes in some way, shape or form for a long time. So, All right. Well, talk about who you're coaching. I mean, I know that you were recently cornering somebody in Bellator. I believe you got a UFC fighter in your stable. I believe your son Anthony has even fought a couple fights as well. So talk about who you're currently working with from, you know, the major promotions, and you know, give us an idea of what the Ant Dog stable sounds like right now.
Yeah. So just real quick too, just to kind of touch back on like that transition from fighter to coach. I also feel like all those losses I got and all those hardships and the learning curves, I've learned a lot through my career, and I'm able to like make sure that these guys don't make the same mistakes, in a sense, make sure they're prepared all the way around, you know, make sure that we're taking the right kind of fights at the right time. You know, that's one thing that I just took fights. You know, I'm like, let's fight. So now as coaching, I see all those things and that I did, maybe I could have done better. And now I'm making sure, you know, these new guys are not doing that. So that helped me in the transition from fighting to coaching.
Okay.
I'm working with Kyle Crutchmere. He's in Bellator. He's a like All-American wrestler. We have another All-American wrestler, Nick Pinchanini. Nick Pinchanini. He's another All-American wrestler who hasn't fought yet, but he's going to be coming up. My niece, Brianna Van Buren, she's in UFC.
Yeah.
My son, Anthony Figueroa, he fought in Bellator.
Right.
There's a handful of amateurs. There's a handful of that I've worked with at the gym, you know, making champions, like amateur champions that right now things really slow down. Right.
It's crazy right now. COVID and everything.
So I'm kind of just working with the small group of the pros right now. You know, I know we're bringing in another guy. His name's Jacoby. He's another All-American. So we're kind of have a small group right now that I'm working with, and we're just building up and we're going to be coming out. I worked with Adam Antolin, Ant Doe, you know, Ant Doe fought in one FC series. I don't forget what it is, but it's out there in Singapore. It's kind of like Dana White contender series, but for one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. We went out there. Adam Antolin, he fought for Dana White contender series, fought for Bellator. He was on the Ultimate Fighter show. Awesome. And these guys, a lot of these guys, they've been my teammates. So I'm transitioning again from like teammate to coach now, and just putting in work and kind of guiding them and working with them and just making sure they're putting in the right reps. And it's just also just holding accountable and being there and showing up and making sure they're showing up and putting in the work together.
That sounds like a great group of fighters. And for listeners that don't know, Gilroy is known for wrestling. Gilroy High School specifically is known for having some really good wrestlers. And then of course, Robert, the Ghost Guerrero, very well-known boxers from Gilroy too. And DC's I believe he's still the wrestling coach at Gilroy High School.
The head coach.
Yeah. He's still the head coach. Right. Yeah. So there's great wrestling pedigree in that area. So, you know, it makes sense that you would have some very good wrestlers in your gym for sure.
And those guys, Kyle's like, he's one of the head coaches for Gilroy Wrestling. Nick's one of the head coaches for Gilroy Wrestling. So it's kind of cool. We're making a pretty good circle there. The head coaches I'm able to work with right here in town too. So, and they're still at AKA. They're still at AKA, you know, they're representing AKA. So we're building a good team right now.
Awesome.
I would say it's the beginning of something really good about to happen in the next year or two.
Okay. As long as the society cooperates.
Well, as long as society cooperates, but we're also essential. Because sports are still going on.
Yeah, they are.
That's true. We're still working. You know, we're still working. It's just unfortunate. Like my gym's shut down. I'm like, crap. You know, I got to be outside. You know, I built an outdoor gym to be outside, okay. But now it's a little bit cold.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this thing turns around before too long, and we can just get back to as normal as possible.
Yeah.
Well, we're about to wrap up. Again, your gym website, antdogsmma.com. Anybody that's in the Bay Area, especially the South Bay, I've been to your gym a couple times years and years ago. It's definitely a good place to go to, and a good team and all that stuff. But is there anything else that you'd like to mention to the listeners, social media or anything like that?
I don't really have much other than I hope they open everything back up here soon. And, you know, the antdogsmma.com is the website. We're here in town, and we're building up. So
Okay.
If you want to be part of a team, and you know, I'm looking for all American wrestlers, come in, be part of the team.
There you go. All right. Well, two final questions. One, the first one is, what out of all your wins, what is the one that sticks out as like, this is my signature one? This is where I put it all together. This is the one where I really put my skill set and fought my fight. Is there one win that really sticks out in your mind that you want to mention?
Oh, it's kind of tough because the guy's a good guy. He was a good guy. Well, and I like him, and we still kind of talk, but it was the one when I went down to 29 Palms. It was my last fight at 35s. And, you know, they kind of brought me in to like, they knew I was a littler guy. The dude was like probably 155 when we fought, and I was still 130 or something, 133. And, you know, he had some tough wrestling. He was a tough guy, but everything kind of like came together there. My wrestling, my jiu-jitsu, just the ground and pound, the top position. And, I was able to finish that fight, finish him. You know, I sprawled, he tried to wrestle. I sprawled hard and I ended up finishing that fight. It was against Drew Bittner. He's such a good guy, though. He's such a good guy. And
well, it doesn't make him any less of a good guy.
No, but I don't like to use him as like that. But that was the one that was like a pivotal moment for me right there.
Okay. All right. He was,
and everything
he
was came together.
He was undefeated at 4-0 coming into that fight based on what I'm looking at. So
yeah, he was.
Makes it a little sweeter, too.
Yeah.
All right. And then final question, and I'll give you a little bit of context on this, but Kung Lee, his answer was Daniel Cormier. We've heard some others, but who is the first fighter that really comes to mind when you hear Strikeforce? Like, who personifies Strikeforce for you? We've heard DC, we've heard others have said Kung, we've heard Gilbert Melendez, but like, who's the guy that's like Strikeforce? All right, that's the guy that really represents, personifies the promotion.
I don't think it's one guy. I kind of feel like it's the whole Bay Area, like the San Jose area. I think Kung, definitely. I think Josh Thompson. I think Gilbert Melendez. You know, I think the whole stable around here, you know, DC really picked it up towards the end there, like, and showed the world, you know. And then he went to UFC and did the same thing in UFC.
Right.
So, but I mean, I think it's all, I think it's kind of all of them collectively.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
That's fair enough. Yeah. I don't really have one. I mean, yeah, Jose Palacios was in there. Like, the whole area, I feel like, just the Bay Area in general. When you think of Strikeforce, I think of like Northern California, the Bay Area, all the top fighters that came from here.
Yeah, Rockhold, and
yeah,
just, but there's tons of good, people don't realize it, but you mentioned Palacios, and I remember seeing him fight elsewhere too. I think he fought in Gladiator Challenge, and just different guys like that. That there was a lot of really talented fighters on the undercard too, you know. And I mean, Luke Stewart doesn't get mentioned a whole lot, but the guy had 9 MMA fights, and all 9 of them were in Strikeforce.
Yeah, Luke Stewart, that's right. James Terry.
Yep, James Terry.
You got all these guys that were.
Justin Wilcox. Yeah, there was
a lot. Yeah, that's right.
Just killer guys that were in that promotion for sure.
And a lot of the guys that made it to the UFC or went on to go to the UFC, I'll say they all did really, really good.
Yeah. I've kind of gone through that. And we haven't even mentioned the female fighters. There would be women's MMA and UFC's. Dana had said he would never do women's MMA. And then Strikeforce, you know, really put them on the map in North America. And Rhonda and Misha and, you know, Cyborg and all the Gina and
pretty
all
much
these,
all I mean, of them.
Yeah. They all pretty much came through Strikeforce, and Scott Coker deserves a lot of credit for giving them that platform to, you know, to make that happen. And they put Strikeforce on their shoulders too, you know, so pretty amazing promotion. That's why we're going back through it on the podcast. But Anthony, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. It was great chatting with you and getting your, you know, very unique perspective, and, best of luck to you, but thanks for joining us on Inside the Hexagon.
Hey, thank you.
All right, before we wrap things up, I wanted to do something a little bit different here. Anthony and I kept speaking after the interview had concluded, and I had forgotten to ask him. I wanted to know why he kind of left Strikeforce and why he didn't, you know, really get into the WEC and later the UFC, especially as they started a flyweight division. He'd fought some of the guys that would end up fighting in the UFC, and again, including Chris Cariasso, who would challenge Demetrius Johnson for the flyweight title. So I wanted to get into that. So it kind of, I'm going to play that clip. It's a couple minutes, and we kind of cut in kind of mid-sentence from Anthony, but he's basically explaining He's going through some of the testing and some of the different things they have to deal with as fighters, as far as their health. And he talks about something that happened to him when he was young and then how it kind of affected him and ended up kind of cutting his career short. So with that, we're just going to jump right back in, let Anthony explain, and then we'll wrap things up.
Hit in the head with the softball, and it gave me a brain bleed. So, and I was boxing by then too. I was already boxed. That's when I was like boxer, and I got hit in the head. Got a brain bleed, went to the hospital, you know, okay. I was okay. The blood clot went away, you know, so I was okay. So there's a little scar in my brain. So I couldn't box through my teenage years. They wouldn't clear me to box again for a long time. So right about 20 years old, 20, 21, I started to the whole Taekwondo thing again. And I started doing the amateur kickboxing. They don't do an MRI, none of that stuff. You can just fight. And so then 2006, I became professional, right? You have to do your MRIs and everything. I went down and I had to do these special tests because they noticed that scar was there. And I was like, okay, so I'll go do what you guys need to do and see if I can get cleared. And so they cleared me. The California's CSAC cleared me. 2012, I was getting ready to fight. I don't know. I forgot that. Taylor McCorkerson or something like that. So I had to get another MRI because it's like you have to do it every, I want to say 5 years or something. And so I go to get the MRI and then they notice that. I'm like, oh, it's cool. It was there before. Like, hey, is it bigger? Is it smaller? They're like, it's actually shrunk. So the doctor's like, but I can't clear you because there's new wording in here. So I was like, oh, it's okay. I'll call CSAC. They'll send me to their doctor. So then I tried to do this and then they would not clear me. So I tried to do an appeal. They would not clear me. So I never got to get my license back.
Oh,
that's what happened.
Oh,
yeah. Right. And I went and I tried to appeal and everything. So even Bellator even tried to help me and like all these promotions tried to help me because they wanted me to fight for them.
Right.
Like I couldn't get cleared. None of the doctors cleared me. So that's why I went out in casinos.
Okay. Well, cause then you don't have the regulatory bodies and dealing with all that stuff.
So towards the end, when I went like that 7-2 or whatever it was, you know, I was fighting more for the love. Yeah, I knew I couldn't go.
I'm looking at your Tachi Palace. You fought a bunch of times for Tachi Palace. So, yeah.
King of the Cage.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Notice, right there.
Yeah. And in between there was trying to get it fixed, but they never wanted to fix it. I was like, damn.
Well, that's unfortunate.
So, yeah. Yeah. So that's the story of why and what happened to kind of help me would also transition from.
Yeah. Cause you knew you had a glass ceiling on top of you there. There was only so much you're going to be able to do.
Yeah. So once I didn't get that belt from Perez, like I was like, all right, that's what I was just kind of chasing. I was like, all right, man, I'm done. And then I didn't want to go out with the loss. So I went and fought one more time with Garza.
Yeah. Eloy Garza. Yeah. Garza. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. All right, I want to thank my very special guest, Anthony "Ant Dog" Figueroa, for taking the time to be with us on the show this week. It was a very intriguing conversation, in my opinion. I really enjoyed talking with him and getting his point of view on things. I know that fighters in general don't like talking about losses, but Anthony was good enough to really share his mentality and kind of how he's learned from those and how he's applying what he learned towards the fighters that he's training, like his niece, Brianna Van Buren, and his son and some of the others that he's working with. So I really appreciate Anthony taking that time. And again, if you're in the South Bay, if you're in the San Jose area, definitely check out Anthony's gym and make sure that if you're looking to get involved, whether it's get in shape or actually become a fighter, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody that can teach you better than Anthony Figueroa. So make sure that you check that out. Make sure you also check us out on our upcoming episodes. On our next show, we are going to be delving into Strikeforce, their second Playboy Mansion show, Strikeforce at the Mansion 2. And this is an interesting card. It doesn't have the star power of Shamrock versus Lee and Melendez versus Thompson, some of those events, but it does have some very intriguing fights. You see a rematch between Trevor Prangley and Anthony Ruiz, which ends up having much more decisive ending this time than their first fight 2 years ago in Strikeforce. We also talk about the main event, which is Kazuo Misaki versus Joe Diesel Riggs, which ends in a very controversial fashion. Josh Thompson makes a quick turnaround and he fights in a non-title fight. And this is actually his last Strikeforce fight for 14 months. So we get into that fight. There's also a very good fight between Corey the One Davila and UFC veteran Terry Martin. So there's a lot to get to in that that event. So we're looking forward to covering that. We're working on our next fighter interview after that. I'm not sure who that's going to be quite yet, but we're working on that. And then beyond that, we have an upcoming interview with Babalu, Renato Sobral, the Strikeforce light, former Strikeforce light heavyweight champion. We're going to be speaking with him. We're also supposed to talk with Frank Trigg. That probably won't be until we get into 2021, but we do have some cool stuff coming up. We got some cool fighters lined up, so make sure that you stay tuned. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Hexagon Pod. We had some really great interactions over the last couple of weeks with fighters like Josh Thompson and Gilbert Melendez. So again, at Hexagon Pod or at Inside the Hexagon Pod. That's our Instagram handle name. You can follow us on there as well. We're always trying to put out content. And again, we want to hear from you. You can reach me at phil@insidethehexagon.com. We'd love to get your feedback on what you think about the show, what we can do more of, what we should do less of, et cetera, et cetera. So please do get in touch. We would love to hear from you. And if you reach out, hey, who knows, you might get a little Strikeforce prize. So if you can, reach out. And also, please, if you can, rate and review the show. We've got several reviews, rating and reviews up on Apple Podcasts. We'd love for you to join in that. Let us know what you think about the show. But with that, we're going to go ahead and ride off into the sunset. Hope that you stay safe and you stay healthy. And we will see you soon.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.